Sorry about those little interruptions. But what I was going to say is what's going to happen is we've started out by talking about filters to restore images. It turns out that what's a very natural extension of that is to get into statistics and filters that in some sense optimally improve images. Okay? And the only way that you can optimally improve images is to get into the statistics of the noise and the statistics of the images. This is not a course in random variables. Loparo teaches an excellent course in that. Quick, what's the number? You don't know either. It's 452. Okay. I highly recommend you consider taking it if you're going to make a career in related areas. Okay. So let's get into the topic we were talking about at the end of last lecture. Whoops, I keep getting these stupid things. By the way, IEEE is on one of those. Okay, that's better. Okay, what we were looking at the last time was, remember this image? And the whole idea is that it had periodic noise in it, and we looked at it, and this is one of our common techniques. We actually look at the Fourier transform of the image and try and identify noise in it. And in this particular case, because we just wanted to get rid of the ring, we put in a band reject filter. Now, notice, this looks like an ideal band reject filter. An ideal one would have a response that had hard edges. Now, you can't, there's not enough resolution for you to see that the edges of this are actually gray in the Fourier domain. In other words, it's not like that, it's like that. Okay. And because it's done that way, you don't get the aliasing, the ringing, that is. And notice how nice a job it did to improve that image. Now, that was a nice one. Very well patterned noise. And really, it looks like a weave. And that's sort of very common of sinusoidal type noise. One of the things that's going to be common through all of the stuff that we're going to be looking at is that we'll need to know the characteristics of the noise. Earlier, last lecture, we talked about how can you take little pieces of the image and estimate the noise from it. If you can find uniform patches, you can estimate noise. Now, noise is not usually very well behaved. If it's periodic, what did we see in that Fourier transform? We've got little bright spots. Usually stuff that's near the center and around it is the image. Stuff that gets further away almost always is noise. Now, instead of putting that ring, that band reject filter, we could have actually gone in, and each of those six or eight, we could have actually put a null there. You could easily do this, where you just go in and set that component in the Fourier transform to zero. That's actually not a good way to do it, because you've got that square type response, you're going to get ringing. You always want something smooth, and even though that last example was done with Butterworth, I'm always going to push you to use Gaussian. It's usually easier to do. It's a very simple shape, and the Fourier transform of the Gaussian is the Gaussian. It doesn't have much ringing. I highly recommend that. Now, that's where we actually were at, basically at the end of the last lecture. I can look at this, and what I know in this image of the state of Florida is that I have scan lines. This could be, this is usually due to the type of sensor. Okay? But I look at this, and I can't tell where the noise is at all. Well, I know that I want to remove those. The key thing is that in this case, because what I want to get rid of are scan lines, and I could be very clever. You know, I could look at the spacing between here, between the scan lines, and remember, delta X, delta F is going to be equal to 1 over M. That was something that I had on an old slide where, well, okay, maybe that's delta Y instead of delta X, but the principle's the same. The change in space, the corresponding change in frequency, is equal to 1 over M, where M is the number of elements in the picture. So that would be 1024. So if we know the spacing in the image, we know the size, we could actually say, I know where those frequency components are. Now, they don't show up in there, but what we put in is a filter, basically, to cut them out. So we're going to get rid of these components, which would be on the vertical axis. We're going to keep the DC terms, because we don't want to upset the average brightness of the image. And if we look at the frequency components in there, this is what you see. Again, you see there is some ripple. It's not as good as the last example, which looked like a woven piece of cloth. That was really good. This one's not so good. There's some other junk in there. It's not as periodic. But remember, we took the whole line. We didn't try to get rid of, we didn't try to keep any detail there. And we get a pretty good looking image. This was not based upon looking at this image, the Fourier transform, and picking out where the noise was. Because we can't see it. At least I can't. The idea was we applied now some of our knowledge of image processing and 2D Fourier transforms and said, oh, periodic noise like this, it's going to be a vertical frequency, I'm going to remove it. And we came up with that. And that's a good approach. Now, here's where things get really nasty. This is actually a Mariner 6 picture, NASA. For some reason, NASA, I guess all of our examples of bad-looking images are from NASA, but it doesn't reflect the quality of what they do. They really do good work, but they may have low resolution. The types of scanners that they have are often very prone to doing things like this. And by the way, they're not just usually visible solid-state cameras. I mean, have you ever tried to buy an ultraviolet CCD array? There is no such thing. You know, how do you image ultraviolet? When you get into the infrared, you get some of the same kind of problems. What you may have is a single sensor and mirrors which are moving, or a mechanical scanner or something. And that's where you can get a lot of stuff which is messed up. Now, this is the Fourier transform of this. Now, you're going to look at this. You work for NASA, or maybe you don't. How do you identify the noise in there? Well, there are a couple ways. I like the good old engineering approach, which is you get interactive MATLAB. You come in here. You have a little, basically, you put your cursor on top of this, and you wipe out that area. Not with a, you know, a nice ringing one, but with a rounded off one, and you eliminate components and see if your picture gets better or worse. Now, that's really great if what you have is a very limited number of pictures. you know, maybe coming from Titan, moon of Saturn or something. You know, not very many. But if you're trying to process video coming from Didi or something, you know, we had, what, 9,000 potential images for you to work on for the midterm project? You don't want to go through 9,000 potential images and eliminate Fourier components. That's great for one-of-a-kind stuff for a book, okay? But how can you do better? Okay. This is the unshifted Fourier spectrum, and my comment is, I think the last one was probably better. I'm always suspicious of anything away from the center. And I'm really suspicious of something that's that far out on any of the axes. You know, our images tend to be a more smooth spectrum. That's, and bright spots are always suspicious. But this is where someone has sat down with this spectrum, picked out ones that they've tried and think are noise. Here's the whole set of ones that they think, which are noise. You notice that there's nothing very analytical about this. It's, let's try it. And then, by the way, here's what the Fourier transform of this thing looks like. Do you see any real patterns there? Well, yes, there's some periodicity to the noise, and that's okay. But do you see any image hidden there? No. So that's actually probably a pretty good estimate of the noise. And we'd like to actually be able to come up with techniques for automatically finding the noise. And by the way, here's what the picture looks like if we eliminate all of that noise. How did we do it? We either put a Gaussian, and eliminated each component, or something similar, and process it. Now, let's look at the original image. There's the original, and you can see it's pretty granular. That's typical of, a different wavelength than the visible, because oftentimes you don't have the resolution, especially at UV, that you do in the visible. Infrared's usually pretty reasonable. And does that look a whole lot better? You could argue. That one's still got streaks in it. Looks like we missed some noise. Okay. But one of the big techniques is that we're just subtracting out noise. Now, oh, I guess you have to turn the power on. I don't use the dock camera very much. Don't worry. All of these will be in the notes on the website. I don't want you to write down all of these equations, but to really get ahead, we've got to start thinking about modeling things. Okay? And this, we talked about a little bit, isn't it? Last lecture, is how do we model degradation? We're going to model it as some function of the image. This is a degradation function. Okay? If you have an actual model of the degradation, it turns out you can do a lot of things. Did we use any knowledge whatsoever of the degradation other than we looked at the Fourier transform and said, that doesn't look like it should be there? Okay, that's not really very scientific. Well, that one we did. That was good. Yes. So, if we have some knowledge of what H is, the degradation, we can often do things to get rid of it. And I'm going to show you that in a moment. The other thing is we've got additive noise. And I'm going to talk more about noise. It is almost always going to be white noise. It's going to be what we call Gaussian white noise. It is not uniformly distributed like that. It's going to be like that. And presumably, you're going to be able to get the statistics of that Gaussian by looking at pieces in your image. Okay. Pieces or areas which have roughly what you think are the same characteristics. So we're going to look at H a little bit. And there's all kinds of functions and properties and stuff. We've been using a notch filter, but I want to comment about some of the first things we can start to do, which are what we call optimal. And, okay, the idea is, and this is what we've been doing. Why don't we come up with some filter that picks out the noise in our image? That's going to be, you can call it a notch filter, band reject, whatever you want. So here's the original corrupt image. Here is analytically now, even though we haven't figured out how we're going to get H, the filter that gets rid of the bad stuff, and you get the noise. And you can Fourier transform it back to the spatial noise. Mathematically, that's what we were doing. No big deal. Now, here's the first thing that we start to talk about. I'm going to start using hats over functions, over images. What the hat is going to do is say, this is an estimate of the original image. The original image F would be noise-free. F hat is going to be an estimate of the image. Now, what's the rest of the notation? G is going to end up being our messed-up image. Okay? That's the corrupted image, what we measure from our sensor. Now, forget W here for a moment. What we've been doing is we take the corrupt image and subtract off the noise. That makes perfect sense. That's a reasonable model. The problem is, the way we were doing it, we don't have a good idea of where all the noise actually is. Weren't we just guessing? Yes. So, one of the next techniques is maybe we start with that guess, but what we want to do is we're going to put a weighting function on the noise that we do know about. And basically, this will vary throughout the image. Think of it as picking up the unknown part of the noise. Okay? And if we somehow could estimate this, we could make these two identical. In practice, we would make F hat and F identical. Remember, G is the corrupted F. Okay? So that's what we want to do. And here is one way to do it. And it's going to get into statistics, and I'm going to talk about statistics more later. And this is a common one. It's not the only way. But this is going to be characteristic of one type of optimum filter, is to pick a neighborhood in the image and minimize the variance of F hat. And you're going to look at that and say, well, is that really going to work everywhere? Well, it isn't. We're going to have a hard time near edges. But basically, we're going to use the information over the whole image and try and estimate RW. And what we want to do is then, and we want to compute the variance. Well, what, and I'm getting ahead, I probably should be doing my statistics lecture already, but the variance is going to be the difference between the value at some point and the mean. That's all this symbol is. It's not really that bad. So in some neighborhood, not the whole picture, in some neighborhood, what I'm doing is I'm taking the average of the estimate and the actual estimate, taking the difference and squaring it. That's really the definition of variance that you should have had way back in your statistics course. Now I'm going to come in and give you some better definitions in about 20 or 30 slides. Okay. But that's a reasonable one to get started with. And believe it or not, what I really want to do is minimize this. And I think you can sort of figure out that minimizing something isn't an easy process. Remember, what you do is you take partial derivatives with respect to the variable, set them equal to zero and stuff. We're going to come back to that. And we're going to also make some assumptions. You make assumptions that things don't change very quickly in the image, that the image is smooth. Again, I'm not teaching a course that's too mathematical. It's not a statistics course. Of course, if you were in 531, I would assume that you knew all of this for the first lecture. Got to start somewhere. But it turns out we can minimize, and I know that you're going to be very ready to accept without proof the result, because you don't want to see the proof. But if I take the partial derivative of the variance with respect to that W, because W is what I want to find, you know, if you buy the premise that minimizing the variance might actually make that work, okay, then I can prove it. I can actually do all of that, and I'll throw this out as a challenge, which I do every year. Extra credit if you can prove this. So far, only one person has. Okay, but you notice it looks pretty nasty. It's got statistics of the noise, statistics of the corrupted image. And you see, by the way, notice what's in here. In effect, the noisy image and the noise. And if you have an estimate of noise, this is actually not too bad. We'll talk about it. We're going to come back. Whoops. Let's see if I can come back now and get what I wanted. Okay. And I want to back up here. Okay. That is I want the automatically varied one. Actually, I don't have a picture of the noise. Darn it. This is the automatically improved image. I was wrong when I showed this to you before. I thought this was the manually corrected image. This is the automatically corrected image. I still don't think it looks that good. Okay, so does minimizing the variance really work all that well? I think the jury's out on that one. It's not great. So we're going to look at some other techniques. Okay. And the next one Anyone heard of something called the inverse problem? Has that ever been talked about in any of your courses? No. Okay, well, don't worry. We'll give you a really big picture view. Okay? Somehow my notes got out of order. Okay. We switch again. Okay. Here's the whole idea of inverse filtering. Okay. This was what we did before, what we talked about before, but in the frequency domain. We've got some degradation function which messes up the perfect image, the noise-free image, and there's additive noise, and so G is our corrupt image. And here's the interesting thing. If you just want it to come up with the estimate, well, why don't we take G in the spatial, this is in the frequency domain, and divide it by H. See what I'm saying? Because if I take that G up there, I divide it by H, what happens? What's the coefficient of FUV? 1. FUV is what we'd actually like to have. That is the Fourier transform of the original uncorrupted image. So we say a good estimate of the image might be. There's some mights here. We take our expression for the noisy, corrupt image, divide it by HUV. We get an ideal first term. That's ideally what we want to have. And we get another term over there. We get the noise divided by the degradation function. So if you knew the degradation, and we took our noisy image and divided it by it, we might actually have a really good estimate of the noise-free, uncorrupted image. Well, there's a minor problem. Anyone want to, well, actually it says so right here. Okay. The first problem is, I don't have any idea what N is. Unless I make an assumption. Maybe I will say that it's white, uniformly distributed noise. If you can estimate the noise from looking at a uniform section of the picture, you could put in an NUV. You know, you have the NXY, you Fourier transform it, you've got an NUV. Well, that one you can do. But here's the real problem. The kinds of filter functions that we've looked at, what's been sort of typical about them, like our Butterworth and Gaussian and even our ideal? What do they do out here? They go to zero. What happens if there's zero here? This is really big. Guess what literally gets lost in the noise now? This term's so small compared to this one, I can't estimate. So if this is small or zero, it's worthless. Well, we've got some ways to get around that, and we're going to talk about those. Okay, but let's get back on track to coming up with what might be H's. Because this inverse filtering requires that you know what H is. How can you come up with an H? Well, one place that degrades an image is your lens. It does not focus it precisely to a point. It's blurred. The best lens is blurred. A really crummy lens is really blurred. Okay. How many of you have played with those little computer interface cameras, probably a USB or something? And I don't even mean the high quality ones. I mean like the 240 or under resolution. Aren't those pretty bad at times? And the lens is like a little ball in there that you can't do much with. Okay, those are examples of ones that aren't too good. Well, it turns out that what happens is we've got a lens there, and it could be a zoom lens, a compound lens, one of those cheap little balls, whatever. In principle, you should get a perfect spot. And this is now, we're talking about a degradation function. In reality, what you're going to get is for the same perfect parallel rays of light, they're going to focus at different distances. And if what we would do is we take a cross section through where we put our image sensor, and we plot it, it's actually going to look like that. This, it turns out, is called the PSF, point spread function. It's blurring that's built into any lens system. This is trivial to measure. Well, I shouldn't say trivial. But what you can do is you can parallel beam of light, focus it. That's one way. Or if it's an imaging situation where it's already set to produce images, you can image a dot of light into a dot of light. Now, what that means is that you need a really good dot of light to start with. Now, one of the things that, there's two ways that you can do this, at least in practice, that I've done to calibrate cameras and stuff, is if you want to be really cheap and simple, you can get yourself a piece of fiber optic. And usually those have a core that's at the most a couple hundred microns. You can stick it in a ball of clay or something opaque or through a piece of cardboard with glue or whatever. But if you put something like that out here, that can be a pretty nice, really small point source. You image that and you see how big that is. And if you stop and think, if your assumption is that it's an ideal source and I should ideally get an image of 1 pixel, you know, 1 pixel to 1 pixel is sort of what you're thinking, point to point. Well, because the lens isn't a good lens, because it messes it up, maybe it's out of focus, instead of getting a point, I get this. That is my HXY. That's my degradation function. I just measured it. By the way, if you talk to real camera people, anyone in here a real serious photographer? Anyone read the optical reviews of lenses like in Popular Photography or something? Am I the only weird person in here? Okay. But, I mean, they will actually measure these things and put them in lens reviews. And you'll see, they'll call it different, though. They won't call it the PSF. They will usually call it maybe something like the MTF, modulation transfer function or something. This is actually in the frequency domain. This that we just measured here is in the space domain. Well, after taking this class and using MATLAB, all you have to do is Fourier transform this to get that, or vice versa. Okay, but you can actually measure a blur function. And it's got a fancy name of the point spread function. And it really, to be honest, doesn't matter. This is in the case of just focusing. But the idea is you can measure, you can put up a perfect or a really good image and then measure the crummy image. The difference between them is your degradation, and you do the Fourier transform of it, and bang, you've got the HUV that we want it to find. Now, this is a case where you measure it. There are cases where you can analytically model it. Let's take a look what the next slide is. Ah, okay. It turns out that atmospheric turbulence is exactly a blurring function. And I don't think that anyone in here wants to get into the mathematics of turbulence. We used to teach a course, by the way, which got into turbulence in electrical engineering. Okay? Its number was 633. Okay? In fact, there is currently, as far as I know, no 600-level course in the School of Engineering. Its title was Stochastic Electromagnetic Phenomena. So you start with Maxwell's equations, and remember where you have the square root of mu epsilon? For those of you who aren't doublies, don't worry. But remember, you would have these little things, 1 over the square root of mu epsilon, and you always assumed, oh, that's 1 over the speed of light, and that's always constant. Well, what if this is a totally random number, and what if this is a totally random number, and you're solving systems of simultaneous partial differential equations with random coefficients? And you get, and by the way, the only people who really solved this right were the Russians, and you can get into Kolmogorov equations, and it's really nasty. We don't want to do any of that. But it turns out atmospheric turbulence, and I don't think we're going to be looking that far away in Dexter, but it turns out atmospheric turbulence would come up very naturally in a hot environment. How many times have you looked out, maybe over a hot parking lot, hot pavement, and you can see the heat waves coming up? It turns out what actually goes on is the sun heats the atmosphere, okay, and it turns out you get big blobs of constant temperature, which means constant mu and epsilon type air near the Earth, and they sort of move up and break up into little particles. And you've got a huge distribution of particles and all kinds of stuff. But in the end, a simple approximation, which we're not going to get into, is you can describe under ideal conditions the blurring of the atmosphere by something like this. And it's usually very famous that you have these 5/6 laws. Okay. By the way, I used to publish some papers on this stuff, but I'm not going to get into the details of it. If you want, you can look them up. But the bottom line is that basically it looks something like that. Oh, okay. And it's known. And we could actually put it in and blur an image. And so if I put in some different constants in here and just look at what an image looks like, okay, here's our original, oh, that one's negligible, so that's got to be the original image. And let's mess it up by adding turbulence to it. By the way, one of the ways, if you're a researcher, that you can really show how good your algorithm is you can put in fake noise and fake things to corrupt it and then show how good you are at removing them. Okay? That's called a controlled situation. Okay? But anyway, here's heavy atmospheric blurring, mild, and not much at all. And if you think about it, doesn't that actually look like a low-pass filter? Isn't that somewhat the kind of behavior you would expect? So it turns out that if you'd actually plot this, it actually looks awfully doggone similar to a Gaussian low-pass filter. depending on the value of K you have. So there's something that's coming out of a, you know, a far away field. You know, let's face it, who's going to think about atmospheric turbulence? It's in this class. Other than maybe you have pictures from planes, satellites, etc., you want to clear up. Now, here's one which is interesting. We want to get a couple models for degradation, and then we're going to see how good they are at removing stuff and cleaning up images. Okay? Motion. And this might be really relevant to some of the kinds of things we're doing. What if you take a picture off of a moving object? Okay, so we're moving, and if you think about it, that's going to blur the image. Now, what's our blurred image mathematically going to look like? I'm always using G for the corrupted image. And we're going to have an exposure time, T. This is the period of observation. Now, this is where you can relate things to the speed of the film, the speed of the camera, and I'm not going to get into that. I'm just going to simply say we're going to take our image in a time T. So basically, the way our shutter is going to work is something like this. And I don't know if I've talked about shutters before. In film cameras, we have what's known as a focal plane shutter, usually. It's a flap, and we have the film. And what happens is it's sort of like a garage door. You zip it up real fast, light exposes the film, and then you zip it up again and close it. And that's exactly what we're talking about here. I come along at time zero, bang, I open the shutter, it stays open, and then at time T, I close it. So that's all I'm talking about here. Goes over, shuts, and sensitivity or nothing changes, but the object's moving. Or rather, the camera's moving. It doesn't really matter. So here's the original image. And we're going to assume that it's moving, so the position is changing. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to put in here that each x coordinate is going to be something like x plus vt and y plus vt. In other words, usually we're going to assume a constant velocity because we're going to take pictures usually relatively fast, but not instantaneously. We might be open for a fraction of a second, but if you're in a fast-moving vehicle or in a satellite or something, you can be moving, you can have a pretty high V. Okay? And it turns out we're just going to go ahead and plug that in. Don't you love the way that I've got all of these equations that I keep flipping over to? Okay. Big thing is, we're going to do, and this is just math now, it turns out it's got a nice simple result. We're going to do the definition of the 2D Fourier transform. It's just the function times an e to the minus j 2 pi ux plus by. We haven't spent too much time on theory before, but I want to give you just a little bit of background here because you may want to do different kinds of motion. Not just that. What you do is you take our model. We stick it right in. Okay? Now, it turns out one of the things that I did not do, but this is a well-known property of Fourier transforms. This is a shift. And in fact, This is exactly what we do when we are moving, remember, the location of our origin from the corner to the center. We do a shift in one. It's a phase change in the other domain. Don't worry. But what it means is simply, if I have the shifted image here, it is equal to the original unshifted image, and it brings in an e to the minus j 2 pi u naught x plus v y naught. So it transforms the spatial shift into a phase shift. And it turns out now that we can get HUV from that. HUV is then just that integral. Because what's FUV? FUV is the original uncorrupted image. We're integrating over T. We just pull this outside. And the question is, what's that? That is the degradation function for object motion or camera motion. Goes both ways. We're usually interested in camera motion. Okay? So we've got an FUV and an H. The order doesn't matter. So if you can evaluate that, and that's why you have textbooks and papers, you go look this up. You know, you don't want to reinvent the wheel. But what you want to know is, could I maybe use this to clean up an image that's taken off of a vehicle that's moving? And if you make some simple assumptions, like how about we have a constant velocity motion in X? It's just moving that way. Nothing that way. It's just moving in one direction. The second term goes away. We put in AT over capital T. And one of the reasons why we want to do it in terms of capital T is it turns out this is going to be periodic and it makes all the numbers come out nice. I mean, we could have just put in A over T as the velocity. But by doing it this way, it's a little bit more elegant. And it turns out that integral, and this is again where you look at the papers and the textbooks. I mean, how many people are going to remember the integral of that thing? That's the kind of thing that when I was a graduate student, I wrote down on the inside cover of my book, okay, and whenever I needed it, I'd just look it up. I never, ever derived that. You don't want to do that kind of stuff that requires, you know, residues or, you know, integrals in the complex plane or any of that, if you have ever even thought about that. You don't want to do that. You just look it up. And it turns out that has an integral that exists. And because we pick that t and we integrate it over t, it comes out very nicely. And notice, it's a sine x over x with an exponential. You could never have guessed that. But it turns out there are actually well-known h's, degradation functions, that correspond to motion. If you do it in two dimensions, all that happens is you pick up, what is it, a vb. Yes, a vb. In both, well, in all three terms, the denominator, the numerator, and the exponent. So you can handle 2D motion. This is constant velocity. I mean, we really don't want to have a real function of T in there. We just want to do something simple. Okay. And it turns out, well, one of the things that we can immediately do is we can go out and mathematically blur pictures. I know that that's really exciting to you. Why mess up a perfectly good picture? But, by the way, this is the cover off of the first edition textbook. Okay. But if we, it's worthwhile to try our blurring function to see how good it works. And here's what it does. And I forget what the appropriate constants are, but they're down here. So we actually plug this in, okay, we have that HUV, And you can either do it in the Fourier domain or in the spatial domain. It doesn't matter. You know how to do both. But you could Fourier transform this, multiply it by that expression that I just showed you in the HUV domain, inverse Fourier transform it, and you get that. And you notice this is with A and B the same. Well, if A is moving that way, and B, well, actually, it depends on how we've got it. Remember, we have our origins in the upper corner, so we'd be moving that way and that way. And if you're moving at the same velocity in each, what's your overall velocity going to look like? Down, 45 degrees. And what does this look like? It's moving down at 45 degrees. Now, admittedly, that looks like an awful lot of blurring due to motion, but that's what motion blurring looks like. And you'll see streaks. So that's not a bad H. Now, how do we try to clean up some images? It turns out, remember what I said earlier? The problem with this inverse filtering is that we have the NUV over the HUV. Okay? And think about both of the HUVs that we just did. One of the HUVs, the atmospheric turbulence, goes out to zero as it gets big, right? That's bad. That's going to make the second term, which is the noise term, just blow up and dominate the results. And to prove that, that's what this is. If we take the complete atmospheric turbulence, H, and divide the image by it, and then inverse Fourier transform it, we get pretty much garbage. So, we're going to be clever engineers. I really like clever engineers. Okay? And by the way, that helps get graduate students graduated faster. Because usually it applies to your thesis. Well, think about it. What's causing the problem? We're going out to zero. How about if we don't go the whole way with HUV? What if we truncate it before it gets too close to zero? And how much is usually in the upper frequencies? Not much anyway. So let's just truncate it. Maybe not sharp. We might smooth it off or something. But let's just stop. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to cut H off before it gets too small. And so here's the result of cutting it off. And it's interesting. Okay, and we're using radii of 40, 70, and 85. And I don't remember what the original image is. Probably 256 or 512 by 512. Okay, but the idea is we're going to limit the size of the degradation function. And that's probably not too bad. Let's see, that's restoring 525B. So let's back up and see how bad the turbulence was. Okay. So it's this one. Fairly heavy turbulence. That's fairly blurred, right? So we come here and okay, that's, well, this one's really bad. This one's pretty bad. And in fact, I can't say which one's worse. They're just bad. Okay. But this one doesn't look that much different than the turbulent bad image, right? But this one is definitely much sharper. So this is a way that you can do things to clean up aerial and satellite photos. People that look at satellite images are really, really interested in how do you make them really sharp. And so there are ways of correcting for blurring. Now, if you're really, really good, and I don't mean NASA now, this is DOD military type stuff, instead of coming up with that mathematical model of the atmosphere over there, they shoot a laser beam out. And they measured light coming back as a function of time. And they actually, in real time, compute the transfer function of the atmosphere. And they have big systems of mirrors. and they move them all in and out, little pistons. And they change, and they use these for HELs, high-energy laser weapons. And they can actually focus big laser beams on moving ICBMs and burn holes through the fuel tank and stuff. And you can only do that, that's a real exotic form of removing image degradation. Okay, that's carrying it to an extreme. But you can correct for the atmosphere, in principle. I say in principle because the government's never going to tell us how well it works or doesn't work. They're just going to spend a lot of money on it. Okay. Now, okay, and we've done some things here. Okay, we've done inverse filtering. And this is now where things are going to start to get really nasty. But they make the most sense. And I'm going to definitely run out of time before we get much done. Anyone ever hear of a Wiener filter? And I don't mean hot dogs. Okay, I see two or three. Okay, you're going to learn a lot of names. Okay, primarily the two I want you to come away with are going to be Wiener and Kalman. Okay, Kalman is actually very famous. And it's interesting. Even though all of these filters were originally developed by electrical engineers for communications applications, they're actually being, particularly the Kalman, I think the number one people that use Kalman these days are computer scientists. And they're really, really big into Kalman filters. But I'll show you why. These are all of classes of quote-unquote optimum filters. We saw the first one already where we started to take the partial derivative to minimize the variance. But if you stop and think about it, did minimizing the variance really make a whole lot of physical sense to you as something worthwhile doing? Not really. At least I didn't think so. But here's one that's really, really reasonable. And don't worry about what expected value means for the moment. Basically, it's just an average. I'll talk about that next time. But here's the fundamental idea, and this makes sense. I have some estimate of my picture. I haven't told you yet how I got it. And here's the original known noise-free image. This has degradation functions, white noise, all kinds of garbage. That we've somehow estimated the removal of. Well, if I take the difference between those two images at every point, square the difference, and add it up, isn't that the total error? The total difference? So why don't I call that the total squared error? Actually, this would be the total squared error. And why not minimize it? Doesn't that make a lot of sense? In other words, how can I come up with the best possible noise-free estimate of the original image? And it turns out that's doable. And this is what Wiener filtering is all about. So that's all it is. It is an optimum noise-free estimate. And we're not going to tell you how to come up with this horrible equation right here. But you can plug it in and use it. This is what MATLAB toolboxes are all about. Okay? But there's a couple assumptions. I haven't talked about what correlation is. That's the next lecture. But basically, it means they have no relationship whatsoever to each other. If they were vectors, they'd be orthogonal. Their dot products would be zero. Okay? So they have no relationship whatsoever to each other. The second assumption, and these are very reasonable assumptions, is that the image or the noise has an average of zero. Well, the image we don't expect to have an average of zero. We would expect it, you know, maybe to be somewhere between zero and one, like a half. but not zero. But noise, on the other hand, it could be equally positive noise or negative noise. And that's not an unreasonable assumption for noise. So if noise is zero mean, that's fine. Only one of them had to be zero mean. And then the third assumption is something that it's not a big deal, but the gray levels in the estimate are a linear function of the gray levels in the original image. In other words, it's a linear process. We don't have a lot of things like squares or cubes or sine functions or something weird occurring. And that's not an unreasonable one either. And it turns out we can come up with an estimate of the perfect image in the Fourier domain. The Fourier domain of the messy image. The Fourier domain estimate of the perfect image. And we see HUV in here. Okay. That's going to be our degradation function. And we have two other things that are new. And we're going to actually prove next time what they are, but it turns out that those are just the Fourier transforms of the noise and the Fourier transforms of the nice, perfect image squared. It's what we call the power. And the noise, you can either measure it or assume it. And we're going to assume that we have some estimate of the uncorrupted image. And it turns out, and if I can get in this slide, we'll be at a nice clean point to start next lecture. Okay. It turns out that engineers don't want to do all of those computations. Okay. I mean, that was a pretty hairy looking equation, wasn't it? It had a lot of those Fourier transforms in it. Well, what we're going to do is, it turns out that there was a ratio of the two power spectra in that last equation. Maybe I moved too fast for you to notice it. But we're going to be good engineers. We've figured out what our degradation function is. Maybe it's atmospheric turbulence. Maybe it's image motion or whatever. Doesn't matter. We're going to just stick in a number and try different numbers. That's engineering. Okay? You always want to have a role for the engineer to keep you employed. Okay? You don't want to automate the process too much. And so it turns out that this stuff works really well. Here is the original inverse filter, you know, where we didn't even cut it off. And that's where we were dividing by zero. The noise term blew up, and it looks terrible. Here is the best case where we took, remember that function, we said we don't want it going to zero, that turbulence function. We're going to cut it off, and we'll just use the ones that aren't too close to zero. And we got an image that looks like that. And it turns out now, oh, and the reason that's not showing up well is I'm showing you my printout instead of the good stuff. But we just tried different values for that K. Okay, remember, I forgot. See, I took this original thing and just rearranged it so all of the spectra of noise in the image are just down here in this. And we're just going to call that a constant. And we're just going to try different values of constants. And let's switch back to the laptop. Okay. And here's the original messed up image. Here's the best result we can do by limiting the turbulence function. And here's what happens if we just do a Wiener filter. It's very slightly different with a K in it. What it does is, you notice that instead of having the corrupted image spectrum divided by the H, it has an H plus something in it. It keeps the denominator from going to zero and blowing up. And we try different K's in there, and you can get a really good image. So a Wiener filter is an optimal estimator. It's related to an inverse filter, and it just wants to keep things from blowing up. And there are MATLAB toolboxes for doing this. You don't have to actually know, at least in this course, how to implement a Wiener filter. What you need to know is that they exist and what they do. That's the first step. And then if you really need it in your thesis or your work or your research, then you can really get into the mathematics of Wiener filtering. But it's an optimum, or rather, a minimum squared error filter. Okay? And it does a pretty good job. And I'll come back to other things next time. This is Wiener filters applied to noise and motion. We'll get things really messed up next time, but I'm already 5 minutes over, and I can tell you want to get out of here. Especially after turning in all of those midterm projects. Scott and I are going through them. Some of them look really good.